Benny Hinn's favorite radio personality, broadcasting legend, Drew Marshall.
Breaker, breaker, breaker one night. Is there anybody out there?
All right, folks, it's time to get into a part of the show that I have been looking forward to tremendously. Bart Campolo is our guest now, folks. He is a humanist chaplain at the University of Southern California. And he's also the son of what's-his-face, but we don't care about that. Ladies and gentlemen, Bart Campolo on the Drew Marshall Show. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing fine. Nice to talk to you.
What's going on? Are you, like, tanning on the beach with your Speedo in California?
You know, the answer to that would be no.
No, the answer would be no. Bart, the world wants to know what's wrong with you. How do you feel about that?
Well, gosh, I wasn't aware that the world was interested in, but...
There are a lot of people that are quite intrigued, quite interested in your life and your sort of spiritual journey because, you know, you're the son of the great one, Mr. Tony Campolo, and lots of people, you know, even Gareth Higgins is worried about your soul now, you know? What are you going to do about that?
Wow, then I've really gotten myself in real trouble with Gareth's worry. it's interesting because... I think that when somebody like me, what's interesting is that I know that there are some people out there in the world that are very surprised that, at you know, over the last couple of years that I finally, you know, I've kind of made the full transition. Like, you know, over many years, I've been becoming more liberal, more progressive, you know, more heretical in some people's minds. And then you go like, wow, he's really off the reservation. He doesn't call himself a Christian anymore. He doesn't believe in a supernatural God anymore. The people that are closest to me, that have sort of followed me over the years, none of them are surprised. You know, it's people out there who don't know me very well, who only, you know, who all of a sudden sort of check in and go like, how can this be? And I think some of that has to do with my own kind of traveling around and being a fairly well-known speaker in parts of the United States. And, of course, I think the bigger part of it has to do with my dad. I think lots and lots of young people and middle-aged people walk away from the Christian faith and nobody notices. But when your dad's Tony Campolo, people do notice.
Yeah. You know, let's just keep the entire interview about your father here for a second. Is his ear hair, is there any way you can convince him to do something about that? Because that's just... Come on.
You know, Drew, he always tells me he's trying to look like you. So
nice. You know, he's the first guy to ever swear on my show. It was so fun. My son is here in the studio with me. I'd like to introduce you to him. He's the co-host for this Thanksgiving Day special. Bart Campolo, Josh Marshall.
Nice to meet you, Josh.
You too, Bart. I've been looking forward to. To hearing what you have to say. I've been reading up. I had no idea. So I've been reading up about all this information. It's been quite interesting. I have. Can you answer a question for me, Bart?
Sure.
What exactly is a humanist?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the simplest answer to that question is that at least I don't know what all humanists are like. Just like what's a Christian, and you go like, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there are a lot of different varieties out there.
Yeah.
But to me, the what I'm trying to do is, I'm a person who got into Christianity, was attracted to Christianity, not by the opportunity to go to heaven when I died, not by all the dogma, not because mm-hmm. it seems so plausible to me that Jesus rose again from the dead 3 days after he died and then ascended into heaven, but because Christianity seemed to me to be a club of people who were really committed to loving one another and to reaching out and trying to make the world a better place and to caring for broken and oppressed people. And that's what attracted me to it when I was a 15-year-old kid taken along by a friend to youth group. And I saw these kids loving each other and pursuing goodness in a really, really intentional way. And I thought, man, I want to be a part of that. And so for me, you know, the dogma and all the supernatural stuff of Christianity wasn't the attraction. That was the price I paid to get into that community.
Okay, that's interesting.
Because I was so excited about what that community was. And so for me, when you say to me, well, over time, you got to the place where you just weren't able to believe those things. Where, you know, and I think for me, the final straw was I was in a bicycle accident about 3 years ago, and I had amnesia and I had brain injury that took about a month to heal. And for about a month, I wasn't myself. And I knew I wasn't myself and I couldn't get back. And when I finally sort of healed up from that, it was kind of the first time it really dawned on me that I no longer believed that I was a disembodied spirit inhabiting this body, and that when this body died, I would go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But that I thought, like, you know, my identity's right here in my brain. Like, if you cut this part of my brain, I'll no longer want to eat food. If you cut this other part, I won't have any short-term memory. If you cut this part, I won't want to have sex anymore. If you cut this part, I'll become really aggressive. If you cut this part, I won't be able to form words. I was like, I'm right here in my body.
Yep.
And when my body dies, I thought, I think I'll just be dead. And that, for me, was kind of like, okay, like, you've died, your orthodoxy has died the death of a thousand cuts. You know, you gave up on the sovereignty of God when you became friends with people in the inner city who had horrible things happen to them, and you said, I don't think God's counting that.
Yeah, but hold on. Let's hone in on that one, because that's a pretty huge stinking deal. I think most people have had to process these sorts of stories, but you had to process it knowing the girl. What happened to this girl? How old was she?
Shortly after I became a Christian when I was 15, and I was just so excited to be part of this community and have this sense of purpose. And like almost any new Christian, I would have done anything for Jesus if you asked me. And the first thing anybody asked me to do was to run a summer camp in a place called Camden, New Jersey, which is a really, really tough ghetto city across the river from Philadelphia where I lived. And you know, that first summer, you know, I had a crash course in ghetto suffering. Mm-hmm. I was friends with lots of children who were in really bad situations, kids who were getting abused, kids who were neglected, sometimes kids who were just hungry and their families were hungry and homeless. And one of the young women I got to be friends with said to me, hey, I really appreciate the work you're doing in our neighborhood, but I could never be a Christian because when I was a young girl, I got gang raped. I got dragged into an apartment building and gang raped by a number of men. And when I got out of there, and when I went the next Sunday to my Sunday school teacher and asked her, you know, why God hadn't protected me, she said, oh, God's sovereign. God could have stopped that if he wanted to, but there must have been some reason that he let it go on. There must be something he's trying to teach you, some way he wants to use it in your life, and you just have to figure out why. And she just said, like, I just decided then if that's who God was, I wanted no part of it. And I, you know, as I'm listening to her and suffering with her, I'm thinking, yeah, I don't want any part of a God like that too. And so, you know, I had been raised, you know, I had been led to Christ in a context where we prayed for traveling mercies.
Yeah.
You know, we prayed for good weather on wedding days. We prayed that God would heal people from colds and that he would help them with tests at school. And so, you know, all of a sudden I decided, you know, if God really does have that kind of control in the world and he allows these things to happen, I don't want any part of him. And so, you know, at that very moment, I decided that all those Bible verses that suggested that God had that kind of power and control, mm-hmm. I was going to ignore those verses, and I was going to underline the ones that suggested that God suffered with those who suffer. And you know, once you start that process of adjusting your theology and interpreting the Bible to match up to your reality, it's a slippery slope.
Yep.
You know, and so later when I'm in college and I have gay roommates, well, you know what? I'm adjusting my understanding of the scriptures to make room for them. And, you know, and so it goes. And so when I finally got to this place, you know, there came a point I remember when I realized that I thought that the whole notion that God had to kill somebody in order to forgive us. You know, here's Jesus telling us to forgive each other 70 times 7, and everybody's supposed to forgive and grace and goodness. And I'm thinking, why does God have to kill somebody? If he wants to forgive us, why doesn't he just forgive us?
Yeah.
And so over time, you know, I'm getting, you know, penal substitutionary atonement, that goes out the window. And so after a while, you know, I'm thinking, like, I believe there was a Jesus and he lived and he died. I'm thinking that the part about his resurrection was something that, you know, people were so excited by the way his teachings lived on that they sort of, you know, goosed the story. And and so by the time I had this bicycle accident, there weren't, you know, if there's a box of things you've got to check off, that was the final one. And you thought, you know, I can't continue to, you know, I can't pretend to do this. Like, you know, I have a career as a Christian leader, and I love challenging young people to use their lives to serve the poor and to care for the broken. But, if, you know, there's just a level of integrity that I didn't want to cross. And, I mean, I was fortunate because I was able to do that. My wife was sort of tracking with me all the way. She was kind of three steps ahead of me. And so when we finally looked at each other and said, you know, I think we're done, I wasn't going to lose my marriage. I wasn't going to lose my kids. Honestly, between you and me, I knew I wasn't going to lose my parents. I mean, you know, and I didn't lose my parents. You know, and so when some people I know who are in the church, I know a lot of ministers who don't believe in God.
Right.
Who come to me privately and they say, listen, I'm where you are, but,
I get where you're coming from. I totally, it's interesting for me personally because, you know, my dad has been going through a similar journey. I remember him talking about when he went to Jerusalem, seeing, what was that, the prayer wall or whatever that was, and just seeing the, you know, God's people crying out to him, and it almost is just, God's just not answering. He's just there and not doing anything about all the horrific things that are happening.
Especially when I walked out of the children's memorial at the, what's it called? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, really, God, how many millions of people? These are your people, right? Okay. Were you having a nap? Like this, you know, anyway, sorry. Don't get me going.
For me, I grew up almost like, you know, like similar to what you did. My dad was a pastor. I grew up as a pastor's kid. And so, you know, me being a Christian was as early as I can remember. So I really resonate with your story. And I like how it's a, you know, it's a journey. It's not like it just happened all of a sudden. It's always kind of been.
But do you remember what you said to me when I came out? I mean, by the way, talk about, you know, using the wrong phrase at the right time or the other way around. You remember what you said to me? I said, how do you think this will impact our relationship? When I came out publicly and said I'm no longer 100% convinced that there is a God, you said to me, do you remember?
Yeah, I think I kind of remember. I remember that, you know, I said, you know, it doesn't affect my relationship with God because, you know, you taught me at a very young age to be independent in my relationship with God. But I would always go to my dad about Christian, you know, questions I had. And I just pretty much said, you know, I guess I just don't trust your opinion anymore.
Man, that hurt, dude. Bart, that sucked, that answer.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that's interesting is, you know, when my wife and I sat down with my mom and dad and talked to them about this stuff, I mean, the first thing my dad said to me that I heard, you know, I don't know if he actually said it, but this is what I heard. So I heard him say, hey, listen, the first thing you need to know is I'm not worried about you burning in hell for eternity. He said, because the kind of God I believe in doesn't send people to hell for eternity for having the wrong theology. Which was a nice thing to say on two levels. It was on the one thing he was saying, like, look, that's not, you know, I'm not terrified for you. I'm not horrified by you. And the other thing, he said, like, I think you're wrong.
Yeah.
And the more, you know, and his second question was sort of like, what happened? And as I talked to him about my process and what went on, of course, the doubts and the thoughts I had, my loss of confidence in the authority of Scripture, all this stuff, every Christian who's serious, it faces those same doubts and thoughts. And, you know, and as he was talking to me, you know, one of the things he said to me was, he said, I'm enjoying this conversation because, he said, you're the first secular humanist I've talked to who hasn't made me feel like they think I'm stupid for still believing in God. He said, you don't think I'm stupid, do you? I said, of course not. Of course not. I followed Jesus for more than 25 years. Like, and I had experiences within there, transcendent experiences, where I really sensed a voice speaking to me and guiding me. And I would interpret those experiences differently now, but I would never say they didn't happen. And I would never say that my dad's transcendent experiences didn't happen. And it makes total sense to me why Christians stay Christian And it's not just because it's their community, and for the ministers, it's not just because it's their job. It's because kind of every good spiritual experience they've ever had is in that context. And so, you know, the ministry I have now, what's interesting is since I've been more vocal, you know, I've always been sort of vocal about where I'm at, and in this case, what happens is I have a lot of people coming to me and saying, hey, I can't believe in God either anymore, and I really miss that.
Hmm.
And they're like, what I miss the most is I miss church. I miss being part of a group of people that share my values. I miss singing those songs and getting a sermon that inspires me. I miss knowing that if I have cancer, somebody will come and visit me in the hospital and talk with me.
But is it not believing in God, or is it not believing in the type of God that you were brought up believing?
Good question.
Because I get that.
For some people, it's not believing in the God that they were brought up with.
No, for you, just for you, man. What was it? What's the difference for you?
For me, like over the course of my life, my ability to believe in supernatural stuff.
Yes.
Right. So miracles, angels coming down.
Yeah.
All that stuff. You know, and honestly, you know, people say to me, "What would it take to get you back?" And I say to them, like, I have a friend. I have a number of friends who are amputees, people who stepped on landmines. And the weird thing is that in all the miracles that everybody's always telling me that are happening all around the world, you know, I've never seen an amputee grow their limb back.
Mm-hmm.
If God would heal one amputee, if we could just, like, if you gave me one verifiable miracle, I think I might get back on the train.
Yeah.
The problem for me is, as Robert Ingersoll said, you know, if I die and go to the, you know, the judgment day, and God says, "Hey, what was wrong with you?" I just look at him and I would say, like, evidence, man. I was just looking for evidence.
I could just imagine that scenario, dude. What's wrong with you? Why are you even here?
Yeah. The thing is, like, don't get me wrong. I was on a bike ride today, and my friend said to me, he said, "So are you an atheist or an agnostic?" I would never be so arrogant to be an atheist.
Oh, yeah. Nuts. You know what?
I'm glad you said that.
Josh and I were talking about that before, because I read in an article, and I was trying to copy and piece things together, and I read somewhere that, you know, you're an atheist. And that's what people have called me ever since I've come out with my doubting stuff. And that drives me nuts, because that's just as arrogant as any dogmatic, extremist that's out there.
To say that I know what's beyond the limits of the known universe, like, I don't know. But, you know, like, there might be $7 billion buried underneath the sand on a desert island with my name on it in Indonesia. But, like, I don't live my life as though there is that money, because I have no evidence that there's that money. And so, like, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, like, on a day-to-day basis, I'm basing my life on the fact that this life is all I've got. And the question I've got is, how do you make the most of it? And that's where, you know, you say to me, what's a humanist? And a humanist is somebody who's come to the conclusion that the only value in this life, the only way to make the most of this life is to be happy.
Yeah.
And the only way to be happy is to love other people. And so I've come to the conclusion that goodness and love and caring for people and trying to meet other people's needs, that's just the most rationally good way of life there is. That's the best and most effective way to be happy. We human beings are a pack animal, and we were made for loving relationships. We evolved for loving relationships. And so, you know, so the bottom line is that, you know, I think a humanist like me is somebody who believes that love naturally selects. I believe in evolution. And I believe that, like, ultimately, love works. It's the best way of life. And so, right, you know, when I stopped believing in God, I thought that I would lose all my values and want to go rape and pillage, because that's what I've always been told as a Christian.
Right.
Without God, you would have no basis for morality. But what I found was I still wanted to build communities of loving people. I still wanted to care for the poor.
Yeah.
I still wanted to reach out to people who were living futile lives and say to them, I've got a better life to you, and it has to do with joining a group of people that are committed to loving each other and loving the rest of the world.
Well, it sounds like you've still got the same core values that Jesus, you know, spoke about in the New Testament. You're talking about love. You're talking about all these core values. It's just the difference is...
you don't think it's supernaturally motivated.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because somebody said to me, so where did you get all this stuff? And I said, well, you know, I grew up in Christianity. I learned all those things from Jesus. I'm not an angry anti-Christian.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so grateful for my experience as a Christian, and I still quote Jesus all the time. The difference is that I don't think it's true because Jesus said it.
Okay.
I think Jesus said it because it's true.
Whoa, that's,
I think these are just like basic, fundamental truths. and I think that you know, and I want to say those things to people too. So I, you know, like I always say to people, like, listen, I'm still an evangelist. I still have good news. Like,
yeah.
I've got something to say to you. I've got a better way of life for you if you're struggling. And I'm not looking to undermine any happy Christian who's growing in grace and goodness. But there's a lot of people out there, and you know, I know this is a Christian radio station. There are a lot of the listeners out there who have family and friends who they know not only don't believe in God, but probably can't believe in God for one reason or another. And the thing is, I hope that they would be happy that there's a chaplain at USC that's, you know, reaching out and trying to do good things with those people and challenging them to a sacrificial love. I hope that they would say, listen, you may not believe what I believe, but you've got the same values that my Jesus has, and I'm excited for what you're doing.
Okay, Bart, you don't have the benefit of seeing this, but I'm looking across the desk here at my 25-year-old son, who is busting.
I could ask you 1,000 questions.
Yeah, he wants to have a retreat weekend and just, you know, process all this stuff.
This is great. Hey, you know what? I'm not surprised. Listen, this is great news. This is great news for people because there are a lot of people who are going like, listen, like me, I hung on as a Christian for 25 years, struggling like crazy to believe in a narrative that made no sense to me because I thought that there was nothing else. And when somebody finds out, like, wait a second, there's another way to pursue the good life, and you know, this is great news. So, yeah, of course he's excited. Of course he's interested, you know, because this is, what I'm going to tell you is something that all your listeners already know, is that whether or not Christianity is ultimately true, it's still losing market share. There are fewer and fewer young people that are able to believe in one religion being the supreme and total truth and all the other ones being wrong.
Yeah.
The fastest growing group of people in North America are the nuns. These are the people that say, I got no religious affiliation. I don't claim anything. And so the question is there somebody who's going to come up with a message that helps people who don't believe in supernatural stuff or that don't believe in traditional religions, that help them create a moral framework and create a framework, a good life that's meaningful and that's profoundly good. And so, yeah, like, this is, I hate to break it to you, but, like, this is the new stuff. And this stuff's gonna grow.
This is the new religion.
This is what, I mean, I'm not saying the other ones are going to fade, or I'm not saying they're going to go away, and I'm not saying I'm sure they're wrong. I'm just saying...
But for all the people, though, for all the people who want a heaven and to want to have the hope of a heaven and the hope that this isn't it, for all those people, which is, you know, I feel like is a lot of people, no matter what religion you belong to, there's a hope of
more
something else afterwards, which is a motivating factor for many people. You know,
especially when they lose a loved one, because
the
end can't be the end. Our brains can't deal with that.
So, what would you say to someone who, you know, that's a crucial component to why they're in a religion or why they believe in what they believe, is that afterlife factor?
You know, one of my favorite writers is a fellow from the 1780s named Robert Ingersoll. He was known at the time as the great agnostic. And he was the most popular orator in North America. He traveled around talking about Darwin and stuff. And Ingersoll wasn't contemptuous of people who believed in religious creeds. He was just contemptuous of the creeds.
Right.
He understood why people bought in. But one of the things that he used to talk about isn't the idea of God that created the idea of eternal life. It was the need for eternal life that caused human beings to invent God. That what happens is of course we hope for immortality. We love life and we miss our loved ones.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, the Bible didn't invent that concept of immortality. That's a natural desire of humanity. And we can't know anything but that we hope for that stuff. And so what Ingersoll used to say was, of course we hope for that stuff. That's a mixture of love and grief. That's the rainbow that comes out of love and the tears of grief. Of course you're
going to... So that's just a result of human emotions, pretty much, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and you know, it's hope shining on the tears of grief. Like, that's what it is. And what I would say is that, you know, in my own life, I really, really wish that I was a superhero. But no matter how much I wish it, it's not true. And so at some point when I'm standing at the gravesides with people who have died, I don't say to them, listen, I know nothing happens. Because I don't know nothing happens. Hmm. I don't know what happens. But I also don't say, hey, I am sure of this. I am sure of that. Here's what I am sure of is, I'm sure that this life is the only life we know we have, and I'm sure that the only wise thing we can do is to make the most of it by loving other people, and to make the most of it by treating each day as if it's precious. I have to break it to you. Eternal life, every fictional account I've ever seen of eternal life, of somebody who lives forever, it's a horror.
Yeah.
It's always a curse. The truth of the matter is that I think that what makes our lives so precious to us is that they are finite. That what makes each day important is that we only have a limited number of them. And so I think it may be that love is this response to the preciousness. And so if I spend a day with you, if I give you a day of my life, it really means something because I only have so many of them. And so it may be that if there wasn't a limit on the amount of time that we have, it may be that we wouldn't take each other seriously. Hmm. And it might be that love is kind of a flower that only grows on the edge of the grave. And that if you don't have a grave, as painful as the grave is, there's no urgency to drive the love. And so all I know is this life is the one I know we have, and I'm really excited about trying to motivate people and help people build communities and pull together in a way that says, let's make the most of it.
Well, Bart, you are a pretty darn good communicator. And I know that there's been a lot of media buzz over this thing, and it's out and you're public and it's different than your dad and blah, 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 but... You know, I just appreciate your guts. That's quite simply how I feel.
I want to say one thing before you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That is, I'm trying to be a good communicator, and I haven't got the website up. I haven't got my podcast going and all that stuff. But I am at U. But I'm here in L.A. and everybody's saying we need you to become a prophet of this kind of good news because atheism and agnosticism are understood to be negative things. They're understood to be people that want to spend a lot of time telling you what they don't believe in, and I got no interest in that. I want to tell you what I do believe in and what I do value and what I think we ought to do together. And so if any of the people that are listening to you, if they write to you and say, hey, how can I get in on that kind of movement?
Right.
I hope you'll send them to me. Give them my email. Tell them, hey, contact Bart. You know, I'll put them on the list of people that I send letters to, and I'll tell them stories about this stuff and introduce them to people. And for the ones that are listening that are Christians and that are horrified by all this, a lot of them will say, well, then I'm going to pray for you. And what I would say is, I hope you pray for me. I expect you to pray for me. And I think I still pray, even though I don't believe in God, because I just think there's something good about voicing our deepest and most positive hopes and dreams and crying out our fears and our doubts. And I think it makes us better people in a way that makes the world a better place. And so I hope they keep praying for me. And I want them to know that in my own weird secular way, I'm praying for them too.
Cool. Bart Campolo on the Drew Marshall Show. Dude, thank you.
Rock on. We'll see you later.
Okay, bye-bye. Stay with us. I've got all I want, all I need.
Broadcasting before and probably after the rapture. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca.